and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Pedro Fernandez.
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. 37 years of radio. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, celebrating almost four decades of radio now, coming to you from the City by the Bay, the Sports Byline headquarters in San Francisco, California. This is Ring Talk. Often imitated but never duplicated. Check it out. We've got 2 hours of rocking and rolling today on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211. Of course, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. So we got it rocking and rolling, all kinds of different angles going today. Of course, we'll hear from the Godfather, the retired HBO Godfather. Mr. Larry Merchant will be here in a little while. We'll talk about Panama Lewis. Who is Panama Lewis? He was a man that took the stuffing out of the gloves that Billy Collins faced when he took on Luis Resto. In other words, not only did he have to fight a guy, but he fought a guy that didn't have any padding in his gloves. All the padding was taken out of his gloves. It ruined Billy Collins' life. He would die less than a year later. Bottom line is, Panama Lewis was basically a guilty of attempted murder. He did spend 18 months in jail, but the bottom line is, it wasn't enough. And, of course, he passed away this weekend, and everybody's getting on me for getting on him, for calling him the Charles Manson of boxing. But what else can you call a guy that actually gets this? Get this. They wrap the guy's hands up in hand wraps, right? But one of the hand wraps was a cast, plaster of Paris. So you get the athletic commission to come over and look at the hand wraps, and they touch the hand wraps, and yeah, they're okay. Then he wets them down, and they become casts like 20 minutes later. I kid you not. This man was a creep. The Charles Manson of boxing, no doubt about that. And guess what? If there is a hell, you know Panama Lewis is there. Next up on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the retired HBO Godfather Larry Merchant. Taking us to break, one of my good friends, Lenny Williams.
Someday that we could happen in a special way. I wish I may. I wish I might make you my all-star shining.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You're so wonderful. You're so marvelous. I'm talking about my next guest, of course, the retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. And how are you this morning, sir?
I'm getting along.
You're wonderful and marvelous?
Well, we're seeing blue skies, which is a first during the fire explosion up where you live.
Yeah.
But I'm still sad about RBG.
Yeah.
And news.
I'm glad that you brought that up right away. And can you expand on that, please? The passing of course, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Can you expand on that for me, Larry?
Well, there's a little something personal. She went to a high school in Brooklyn that was a few miles away from me, Madison High School. My father-in-law went to that high school. I played football against that high school. So there was some distant connection. But she was an extraordinary person and a heroic figure to a lot of people. And how many people ever achieved that kind of status that she had? But more than the status, the kind of things that she, the kind of wrong things that she turned right. in our society.
You know, I have a young lady that's a friend of my best friend's daughter is going to college in Southern California, and I told her that if there was a couple of people you need to look up to, it was Miss Ginsburg and, of course, Kamala Harris, because she looks like Kamala. But I told her this, and she said to me, really? And she said, yeah. So then she became a Ginsburg freak, and her father was telling me she's all into, you know, the now-deceased Supreme Court justice. But on to a more positive note, did you get to watch any of the fights last night?
No.
You didn't miss nothing.
I read the results and the reports, and it sounds that way.
Okay.
In fact, my wife wanted to watch an RBG documentary that was on at roughly the same time, and that's what we watched.
Okay. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. I've been taking a lot of heat because I went after Panama Lewis, who passed away this weekend. Of course, 74 years old, a trainer out of Panama originally, but bottom line is he's worked with some superior guys and Mike Tyson and Roberto Duran and people like that. And of course, he was the man in Aaron Pryor's corner when Aaron Pryor busted up Alexis Arguello as bad as he did in that fight in 1982. And of course, the following year, he was involved in the Luis Resto corner. And I didn't find this out until yesterday because I studied most of that trial. But what he did was he brought some plaster apparel from a medical supply house, and he wrapped it around the Resto's gloves, and then he wrapped regular hand wraps over that. So when the athletic commission came over and inspected the wraps, they said, yeah, they're okay. So then he took a cold water bottle and made these things wet, and they turned into casts. And in addition, he took the stuffing out of the gloves. Of course, Billy Collins was dead about a year later, of course, in an automobile accident, but his vision was blurred. He was permanently injured from that. Panama wouldn't go on trial until 3 years later. He would eventually spend 18 months in jail, and I think Luis Resto spent some time as well. But imagine that, Godfather, scheming enough to wrap somebody's hand up in a plaster of Paris wrap. I mean, that's the creepiest stuff. That's Charles Manson stuff.
Yeah, that's not an accident that happened in the ring. And, of course, we caught him on HBO when, I forget the fight.
The bottle.
I'm sorry?
You talk about the magic bottle? Give
yeah,
me the special mix?
No, not that bottle. The other bottle. You know, I don't know if he called the magic bottle or not.
No, he said the one I mixed. The one I mixed.
Right. You're correct, sir.
Yeah.
And listen, boxing, it sort of fits in some freaky way with, you know, how people view boxing and all of the underhanded things that can happen and so on. But he was caught, he was nailed, and
you know,
I haven't heard of anyone since that's been. That's even accused of trying anything like that.
You know, we were in Philadelphia.
And by the way, I found out that what he had in the other bottle,
yeah,
was a mixture of, I think it was orange juice and cocaine.
I you know what? And somebody else told me it was an asthma medicine that asthmatics take, that he liquefied it, he broke the pills up, and he made it into liquid, and they drank it, and it opened up their lungs a little bit more. I mean, he was like the mad scientist of boxing.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why he got work in New York.
You know, he was banned in every state but Philadelphia, and in Pennsylvania, and I never understood that. And, of course, he got to work the Mike Tyson-Buster Mathis fight, and that's where he and I came. I mean, Godfather, we came within a whisker of going to blows. I pushed him away. And Don King said to me, hey. No, I was ready to go at him because I had a hot byline back then, and I had written what a creep that he was. I mean, I had written about his crimes. He was a criminal. He was an outlier criminal. And he went to jail for it. And he tried to come at me, says, I never did anything wrong. I mean, can you imagine him telling me that in public, out in front of people, I never did anything wrong? I wanted to slap him.
You know what? Maybe where he grew up, being able to put one over was the right way to live.
Well, you know, you know what's sad about this is that is that Arguello and I spent some time together, and we talked about it. And Arguello said to me, you know, Pedro, in 90 fights, I never got busted up like that ever. Ever I got busted up. And what happened to the gloves, Pedro? What happened to the gloves? The gloves disappeared when they took them off Pryor's hands, Godfather. In other words, of all the fights you maybe want to save your boxing gloves from, okay, you have this big monumental fight in 1982, the fight of the year and everything, and your boxing gloves disappear in the ring that night. I mean, that stinks, dog. That stinks.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I remember about that night, Pedro?
Huh?
Maybe just before the main event, I'm not sure, I interviewed Henry Armstrong.
Wow.
Henry Armstrong was there in Miami. He was a preacher. And, of course, one of the great greats.
Wow. I was around Kid Gavilan, obviously one of the greats, too, but not like Armstrong. And he, how can I put this? He was pretty much gone at that point in time. Was Armstrong still somewhat lucid?
Oh, yeah. He could talk the talk.
152 wins, 22 losses, 101 knockouts, only stopped twice. Oh, my God. Homicide Hank, that's what they called him. I never got this. I never met him. I mean, he died in 1988. And I never was fortunate enough to meet him. But you say he could talk the talk all the way up to the end, huh?
Yep. If he couldn't, he was masquerading pretty well.
A little Kid Gavilan story before we go to the break. I made the mistake. Listen, they tell you in television to never give a kid or don't have kids on, don't have animals on. Okay. The third one is don't give old boxers a microphone. Because I gave this guy a microphone down there in Miami, like in around 1999, 2000, somewhere around there. And he went off, and he was punchy, and nobody could understand what he was saying, all 9 yards. I had to almost forcibly take the mic from him, but I never did. I never committed that error ever again.
Oh, I never had that experience.
Lucky you, Godfather, because I was panicking. The retired HBO Godfather comes back after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look from the world of boxing and MMA. If you'd like to join Larry, you can on the toll-free 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or shoot us a text here in the studio. The text line, 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, 415-275-1613. The Godfather of Soul, JB, to the break. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Wait a minute, shake your arm, then use your palm. Stay on the scene, like a sex machine. You got to have the feeling, sure as your bone. Get it together, right on, right on. Get up, get on up, get up, get on up, get up.
Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
What?
I grew up thinking in positive thinking. Dale Carnegie was one of my mentors, of course, the late, great Dale Carnegie. And he used to say, he who fails to plan is planning to fail. Well, how about Al Haymon coming back with a September 26th pay-per-view card featuring the Charlo brothers? Now, I got no problem with that, but pay-per-view, he had just 2 weeks to lay this out to the public and put it on pay-per-view for $74.95. Now, that's probably not a card I'll be buying. I'll probably be watching it on YouTube. Larry, Al Haymon, the master showman, not all that sharp. I mean, just 2 weeks to announce a card, he's going to put it on pay-per-view. I mean, good Lord, and $80?
Let's just say I was a little surprised when I heard about that one. But, you know, maybe he figures that he can make a few bucks more in pay-per-view than the various networks are willing to offer.
Okay, but I'm looking at this card here, and the Charlos now, I'm not knocking the Charlos per se. I mean, they both are talented young men, but, you know, together they could draw maybe 35 or 40 people. I mean, they're just not the most popular guys in the world. They're not big.
And that's the upside, right?
That's the upside. And then you got to sit there and you got to watch them. So bottom line is, this is almost like promotional suicide. I guess he couldn't get anybody else to buy this. That's why he put it on pay-per-view, right?
Well, I think that a network would be interested in presenting a doubleheader with the Charlo brothers. They're both good fighters. I think Jamal is a little bit more advanced. But I don't think it made dollars and cents to a lot of people.
Dollars and cents. Looks like Deontay Wilder is going to push that third fight with Tyson Fury. Is that what, are you hearing that too?
I'm not hearing it. I might have sensed it by a few things that were said. I think that Wilder, who is past his mid-30s already, isn't he?
He's getting there.
He's got to make his move and for the biggest bucks he can get.
You brought up Henry Armstrong earlier in the show. Of course, the original, the first division three-time champion. He was a featherweight champion, the lightweight champion, and the welterweight champion. And did he fight for the middleweight championship too?
He fought for the middleweight championship and got a draw. Many people thought that he won the fight, but they didn't want to see one guy dominating half of the divisions in boxing at that time. But nevertheless, he was a singular historic figure. Fought as a featherweight. He was fighting lightweights and welterweights all the time. An extraordinary fighter.
And he lost to Ray Robinson in 1943.
I remember listening to that fight on the radio as a kid, and the general census was that Robinson, who had great respect for him, who was still early in his career, carried him.
You know, that's what I was told. And when I pushed that to Ray Robinson in a June of 1984 article, he just sort of smiled. Didn't answer it, just smiled.
Well, that was the answer.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I don't know if I told you this, but we were at the Aladdin Hotel for the Duran-Hearns fight, and I opened up the door, and he opened up the door, and we just sort of looked at each other. And we were, like, opposite hotel rooms in this old hotel, the old Aladdin Hotel, back in the bottom of 84. And I was just mind-blown by him. I mean, Sugar Ray Robinson. Anyway, we went back and forth and this and that, and he ended up entertaining me in his little suite or his little room there with his wife, Millie. And then, I don't know if I told you his godfather, but he was wearing a pink bathrobe and a pink shower cap. I mean, he was true to that. I mean, that was so much so Ray, like his pink Cadillac.
Well, I can remember going to Madison Square Garden and seeing his Cadillac parked outside in a no parking zone, but it was a parking zone for him. And it was just that he was showing up for a fight that somebody else was fighting. He wasn't on the card that night, but he was an extraordinary fighter and personality. He was really a figure of the jazz age, the great jazz performers followed his fights as though he was one of them.
And of course, he did open up a jazz club in
Harlem.
In Harlem, yeah. And I don't know how you know, most fighters are crummy businessmen. Was he a decent businessman?
You know, I have no firsthand knowledge. Although Teddy Brenner, the famous promoter of Madison Square Garden, told me that he had a fight scheduled at the Garden, and at the night of the fight, he came to him and said, "I want $25,000 now, or I'm not going into the ring." And I think that was a measure of how many fighters got cheated out of their money back in the day.
I remember the story of Ray Charles. He said, "Only pay me in $1 bills," because he couldn't trust anybody.
Yeah, yes, that was the thing. You know, they told you they were going to give you this, and they had a contract, but you think a fighter was going to hire a lawyer? Certainly not back in that day.
You know, speaking of fighters making making lousy investments. Iran Barkley beat Tommy Hearns for the world middleweight title. Of course, what did he do? He sunk all his money into a car wash in Harlem. Needless to say, it lasted about 7 months.
Well, maybe somebody felt that they had to wash off all those bills.
Larry Merchant is our guest, the retired HBO godfather, of course, living in a loving life down in Southern California with his wife. And how is Mrs. Merchant today, sir?
She's doing pretty well. We're still social distancing and masking and trying to do the right stuff.
You know, it isn't too burdensome when you think about what the consequences are, and that's what people don't realize. It's the consequences, you know what I mean? Because if they haven't had anybody, if they haven't known anybody or seen anybody that this virus has impacted personally, they're sort of like, maybe not so. But, you know somebody, and I know a few people, and it hits home hard.
Yep, and, we have a few people that we see, and I have to go out and do shopping a couple of times a week. But you just try to be smart about it.
Okay. Now, you've heard of Iron Mike Tyson, Godfather. I'm introducing you to Iowa Mike Tyson. What do you think his record was?
Tell me.
0-8. Oh, anyway, you have a wonderful son. Oh, let me ask you one more thing. The Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. I mean, that's really the fight that people want to see, and that's the fight they want to do in the UK. I mean, big, big money, no doubt about that. But if they can't get an audience of 70 or 80 grand to pack Wembley Stadium, what does that do to the fight? What does that do? Does that take away from their dollars, or they can make more money on pay-per-view? I mean, how does that figure out?
You know, it's above my pay grade, Pedro. I'm sure they'll do whatever promises to make them the most money and have the most guarantees and take as long as they can to make it happen in the hopes that social distancing becomes a little closer.
Okay. Alan Minter, the former world middleweight champion from the UK, passed this week, and he's known mostly for the riot that occurred after Hagler beat him for the title. But, you know, he was a pretty good guy. I met him a couple of times, and he was a pretty good guy.
He appeared to be, and he was a pretty good fighter, but Hagler was a young, hungry fighter, and
vicious.
He beat him over there.
Yeah, I mean, that was yeah. And of course, the people from the UK acted, how can I put this, inappropriately. They were throwing stuff in the ring. Marvin wasn't even announced the decision winner there. Of course, he had to get his belt, I believe, in the dress room or something like that. But at the end of the day, it was a poor night for European fight fans, no doubt about that. But it was the shining night for Marvin Hagler. Of course, he had been denied in the Antifermo fight. And, you know, speaking of the Antifermo fight, there was a judge. Dalby Shirley was a judge in that fight. And Dalby Shirley had all kinds, you and I know that Dalby Shirley had all kinds of bad scores over the years. And the only score he would ever admit to being wrong was the Antifermo Hagler fight. He said all the other ones, he was right. And he was dead wrong. Remember him?
I remember him, but when you're in that position of a referee or a judge, you got to believe that what you're doing is right.
Good point. No doubt about that. Godfather, have a good week. I wish you the best. I thank you so much for your time each and every week. I feel blessed the fact that you're willing to spend some time with us, and my audience does as well. What can I say? 37 years of radio. You and I have known each other 35 years. I thank you from the bottom of my heart, sir.
It's my honor.
Wow. The retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant, on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
You don't know what to do to me. Baby, 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 baby.
decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Just under 90 seconds remains in the fourth round.
We use that arm to try to take away the base.
Oh, look at the kicks.
That's old school Hicks and Gracie style.
Oh, he's got the choke.
Back it in.
Penn looking to choke out Florian. BJ Penn looking to remain the champion. It is all over. BJ Penn has defeated Teddy Florian.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
This is outrageous. I shall report it to the angry.
Last night at the Apex Center in Las Vegas, that, of course, that's the UFC's little private training center. In the main event, Colby Covington, Donald Trump's favorite fighter, improved his record to 16-2 with a fifth-round stoppage of the former champion, Tyron Woodley. Of course, Tyron coming in, how can I put this, not inspired. This is not the fired-up guy that he was five, six, maybe seven fights ago. Maybe that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, that he's aging. And, of course, Colby Covington's a good fighter, no doubt about that. But Covington now 16-2, tie, drops to 19-6. Here is Colby Covington with the President of the United States.
You are a great fighter, man. I'll tell you, you make it so easy. I don't know how to do that. Congratulations. I wanted to watch that fight tonight. You were great.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. You gave me the dragon energy when you shook my hand on Sunday at your rally, and it doesn't matter if King Kong was in front of me. I was not going to lose after getting to shake your hand and beat
you.
You
weren't going to lose. Well, he's a strong-looking guy, too. He's a tough guy. He's a great fighter. He was a champ, and that was easy work, relatively easy work for you. I'm proud of you, man.
Thank you so much,
Mr.
President.
I'm proud of you. I just made a big speech. I had 35,000 people. I said, I got to get home now to watch Kobe. That was fast work. Well, great. He's a tough guy, and he's a good fighter, right?
Yeah.
Did he give you much of a problem? What did you see? Strong guy, right?
Yeah, strong guy, former champion, but it didn't matter who was in there, Mr. President. After getting to see you, I don't care if there was Superman in there. I was beating anybody.
That's great, Colby. I'm proud of you, man.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan, and I'm proud of you. You're tough. You have the right spirit. So now go win the next one and just keep it for a long time, right? Just keep that championship for a long time. But you are something. And say hello to all the guys. I appreciated the shout-out tonight, too. I'm your fan. You're my fan. You know, two of a kind.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I'm going to bring you the new belt to the Oval Office soon after you win November 3rd by a landslide.
You get that belt and you bring it in, and I'll see you, man. We're rooting for you. I came in from a big speech tonight. I said, I got to get back. I got to watch this man.
That's so humbling.
You keep it going. Colby, keep it going. You look great. You look fantastic.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Take care of yourself, okay?
Thank you so much, Mr. President.
Very proud of you. Very proud of you, Colby. So long. See you soon.
See you soon, Mr. President. Have a great night.
So long, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Man, they spent like a minute and a half saying the same thing back and forth. Anyway, the bottom line is Colby Covington gets a call from the President of the United States after his win last night over Tyron Woodley in Las Vegas. That was on ESPN+. Donald Cerrone, the Cowboy, and Nico Price had a draw and went to a majority draw. Nico Price had a point taken away in the first round for poking with the open hand. In other words, that's sort of how you detach retinas. In other words, you poke at people with your fingers. And that's how retinas get detached. So they can't have that in MMA. It's a big, big thing, and it took away a point. No doubt about that. It was justified. Anyway, Chimov took this guy, Gerald Merchant, and just, I remember I told you he was a mark? Yeah, he was a mark. He got knocked out in 17 seconds. And he's a strong guy. I don't think he's been stopped too many times, or not even before. But, man, he got hit once, and it was all over. I mean, he's all over. This guy at middleweight looks like a monster that maybe nobody can stop. Kazmat. So, yeah, sounds like a hazard. He sounds like some hazard. You wanted some hazardous area. Kazmat. Yeah, he is. He's a hazard to anybody in fighting in the middleweight division. Anyway, Johnny Walker was the winner. Mackenzie Dern was the winner, of course, in a female fight against Randall Marcos. They hooked it up at strawweight. She won via submission armbar. Outside of that, no other big names on the card. Of course, the card is suffering, per se, and the USC is suffering to an extent because of the fact that they've got, you know, they don't have the talent pool that they think that they should have. I mean, it's a $4.2 billion product. That's the USC. But is it worth $4.2 billion? Well, we'll talk about that another day. Anyway, next week, the UFC middleweight title is on the line. Looks like Colby Covington is going to try to hook it up with Israel Adesanya. Of course, he is a champion. Bad dude, undefeated, never lost a fight, like 19-0. Taking on Paulo Costa is like 12-0, never lost a fight. So this is like the battle of the unbeaten. These guys are monsters. But Costa is one of those guys that I was under the impression he takes Flintstone vitamins. What I mean by that is steroids, you know, performance-enhancing drugs. Because, you know, when he comes down for 225 pounds, anyway, bottom line is he loses a lot of weight. He does it real fast. It's almost unnatural. He's got a huge body. He looks much bigger than a 185-pounder. That's going to be a bit of a toss-up, him and Israel going back and forth for the 185-pound UFC championship. The co-feature also feature a title fight. Dominic Reyes and Jan Blachowicz are going to hook it up for the vacated light heavyweight title. Of course, John Jones giving it up, wanting to make his move to heavyweight. Also on the card, a women's bantamweight fight, 135 pounds. Kaylin Vieira going to take on Ciara Eubanks. Okay, that's a good one. Ciara Eubanks. Anyway, bottom line is the women rock on. Listen, the women rock on MMA. They put forth. They come out. They entertain. You'll never see a dull women's MMA fight. I haven't. Never in my life. Because I got something to prove. Okay, women's boxing. Not so much. You know, the reason why women's boxing is so bad is the fact you've got smaller human beings using the same size gloves as men, and it just doesn't work. I mean, you want to talk about tennis, the court's a little bit smaller. You want to talk about baseball, the bats are lighter. You want to talk about basketball, the ball is smaller. I can go on and on, but the bottom line is boxing just doesn't. They're not too sharp on that one. Anyway, let's switch gears. Talk about the results last night in Las Vegas. We've got some guests coming up in hour number two. They're going to blow your mind. Logan Hobson will be here. Of course, the founder of CompuBox, a boxing writer of note himself. So he'll be here. We'll talk about his resume and, of course, Arguello on Pryor. He was there for that. He interviewed Pryor the following day, I believe, for UPI. So we'll hear from him and take that back. Kenny Rafer is going to be coming in from the U.K., Kenny is a professional boxer. I think he's retired. He should be retired anyway. Bottom line, he's still training guys, and hopefully Kenny's going to be our UK guy when it comes to giving us some scoops from the UK. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, this is a Sunday edition. We come to you Saturday and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, right here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, of course, Channel 211. Bottom line is we're rocking and rolling, of course, Saturdays and Sundays, Saturday for an hour, Sunday for 2 hours. This is the Sunday show, two-hour edition. Last night, boxing in Las Vegas. The sniper, that's what I call him, Jose Pedraza, moved to 28-3, 13 whacks with a 10-round unanimous nod over 2008 Olympian, U.S. Olympian, Javier Molina, now 22-3, 9 KOs. Javier's problem is he couldn't punch. Scores were across the board in his career, 9 KOs in like 25 fights. Anyway, scores across the board, almost a shutout, 99-91, 98-92, and 98-92. The sniper can fight, no doubt about that. But the guy I thought was really good, and we'll get to that in just a second, because there were some other fights on the card last night. Erickson Lubin, now 23-1, 16 KOs, a 12-round unanimous decision winner over Terrell Gasha, 21-2, 10 stops. Of course, that was for the that was in Uncasville, Connecticut. Of course, the Mohegan Sun bubble. They got a bubble back there. The scores are 115, 113, 116, 112, and 118, 110. But the guy that really stole the show, I thought, this weekend, man, yikes. And Socrates Palmer, the PhD of boxing, looks like he's grabbed himself an ace here out of Philadelphia. Unbeaten, 147-pound welterweight. I'm talking about Jaron Boots Ennis, now 26-0. 24 KOs. Holy cow. Six-round KO winner over a guy that had never been stopped before, but like Socrates said, he was supposed to lose. You know, Juan Carlos Abreu came in at 23-5, left at 23-6, but he took a licking. I mean, he just took a licking. And this southpaw, meaning a left-hander, Ennis, he can punch with both hands. He's a huge welterweight. You know, when I see these huge guys at different weight classes, it's a disadvantage. I remember fighting guys that were big. You know, I mean, big guys. And some guys were bigger, big junior welterweights. I was a sort of like a medium junior welterweight. When it came to welterweight, I was small. I was real small at welterweight. I mean, I could fight welterweight, but not well because it was too small. It's just size means. Listen, I told you this before. Size means everything in two things, combat sports and pornography. I think I'm kidding. Look it up. Anyway, Jaron Boots now 26-0, looking real sharp. He may be the... How can I put this? He may be the guy to watch in the welterweight division. Everybody's talking about Errol Spence and Bud Crawford, Terrence Crawford, of course, of Omaha, Nebraska, the guy that's moved up, 1, 2, 3 weight classes now. Of course, I think he's stretching it. I think he's at his limit. Crawford is at 147. Crawford's looking to take on, I think, Amir Khan or the other guy over there from UK. I can't think of his name right now. And then, of course, you know, Mr. Errol Spence is going to come back and he's going to fight Danny Garcia. Oh, boy, am I excited about that, aren't you? I mean, Errol Spence, of course, the guy that got tossed out of a car at 115 miles an hour, was drunk, was loaded, got thrown out of his Lotus or his Ferrari or whatever it was when it turned over, and he got lucky, got thrown out the car, and you know, he's alive. And he should just take that and walk away. But he's not going to walk away. He's going to try to come back and box, which I think is going to be a major error. I think because once, listen, you can spar, you can train, this and that, but, you know, he suffers some effects from that car accident. You don't walk away from a 115-mile car wreck, whether you're drunk or not, under the influence, and not suffer some residual effects. Of course, the neurological damage was quite obvious when I looked at his eyes, of course, and that mugshot, when they shot the picture for the DUI a few days later, you saw the messed up eye that he had there. Of course, that's internal bleeding. So he's had some injuries. They've been internal injuries. Well, are they serious? I think they're serious, but then again, I'm not a doctor. Of course, he's got the green light to come back and box. These guys are going to hook up in October. It's going to be on pay-per-view as well. Of course, Al Heyman, now like Mr. Pay-per-view. I mean, I don't know where he's going. I don't. Because if the Charlo brothers aren't enough to, like, commit promotional suicide on, putting them on pay-per-view, what is? I mean, what is? I mean, Jermell and Jamal, some people can't tell them apart. There's one letter distinguishes between the two. One fights at 160 pounds. One fights at 154. Of course, the one at 160 is supposed to be the better of the two. And at the end of the day, but they're not household names. They're not even close to it. I mean, the fight we really like to see maybe is Charlo and Canelo Alvarez. Of course, Canelo Alvarez, the pound-for-pound king. Or is he? I mean, the guy's been off now. What? He's going to be off a year. He'll be off a year. And he doesn't seem to be too interested in coming to fight again. I think maybe the money got to Canelo Alvarez. I kid you not. And, of course, I told you how money ruined Roberto Duran. It just money ruins women. Money ruins all, exactly, ching, ching. Money ruins people. But I told you, money ruined Duran. I mean, Duran was making $400,000 or $500,000 a fight. Then he made the $1.5 billion, of course, after, 75 fights when he fought Leonard the first time. In the rematch, he got $8.5 million. But Mike Trainer said, you have to be ready to fight in 32 days. And Duran was way overweight, and Duran cut the weight and made the weight. But the bottom line is that was a no-loss fight, and he wasn't in condition for that. But, you know, that was a smart move by Mike Trainer. Absolutely a smart move. He sent somebody down to Panama, and they took pictures of Duran, and he sent these pictures back. I kid you not. They did this Federal Express, and it was like a undercover type of thing. They went down to the spy on Duran. They saw him with his big old belly, drinking beer, doing whatever else he does, of course. And they said, guess what? We'll offer him more money than he can ever make in his entire life. He can never turn it down. We'll make it $8.5 million. Take it or leave it. You've got to be ready in 32 days. And Duran said yes. Of course, he would have cut off his arm to make that weight for that money. Cut off his arm, made the weight, and of course, that was the no-moss fight. Still, you know, when you look at the fights of the 1980s, you have to figure that Duran and Leonard was one of the epic bouts. Note about that. Leonard and Hagler in 1987, seven years later. Of course, Duran and Leonard hooking up in June of 1980. And of course, then you got Tommy Hearns and Leonard in the anniversary just went down recently. We'll get into boxing history a little bit more at the close of this hour. But of course, you know, I mean, what can I say? Boxing is rich in history. It's just so rich in history, and we get to talk about it each and every week here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I thank you from the bottom of my heart, no doubt about that, for being part of the Ring Talk family. We are live on Twitch.tv, of course, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211. My name is Pedro Fernandez. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
If they're not happy here, they can leave.
So it's 1984. I'm working at Potrero Police Station for the San Francisco Police Department as a patrolman. And I'm doing these phone interviews for Charles J's Radio down there in Florida. First he was in Florida, then we went to Las Vegas. And, of course, Charles and I were going back and forth on the radio and the phone for like 4 or 5 years. I said to myself, why don't I just get my own show? So I decided in 1989 I would start a show. We started Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, the actual show. Having been Ring Talk with Charles J and me and Rudy, and that's anytime. Let's do some Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez. Anyway, bottom line is, 1989, Joe Gilardi gave me a check for $4,000. That's what started the show. I talked to him this morning. I thanked him for the fourth grand. He's still alive and rock and roll. And, of course, Joe Gilardi was the king of pay-per-view. When I say pay-per-view, I mean think closed-circuit television. When I think pay-per-view of 25 and 30 years ago when people used to go to, like, major ballparks and major arenas and gyms and things like that to watch fights on a big screen. He was the king of closed-circuit television. And, you know, it's been a while. I mean, since I won that first Golden Glove title, I remember my mother and my Uncle Ray were the most proud, were the proudest people in the entire world. I'll never forget it because, you know, I wasn't supposed to beat Keith Rucker. Rucker was 6'1½", 139 pounds. He had been knocking everybody dead. In fact, guys were turning pro and moving away from the division because they didn't want to fight him. Well, I had no problem with that. 12 seconds of the fight, Keith Rucker was on his back. Okay, and I was telling him to get up. I remember the referee, Brent Venegas, pushing me away, saying, Pedro, behave. Go back to the corner. No, I was into this fight, no doubt about that. But nobody thought I was going to win that one. I think even my family was a little quiet before that fight. They never quiet afterwards, and I'll never forget the proud look on my Uncle Ray's face. Of course, he's passed away the following year, and he never got to watch me win the 83 Golden Glove Championship, which I dedicated him and signed his name on the wall of the Concord Pavilion, my dressing room over there. So what I'm trying to tell you is, although it's great to have been done radio for 37 years, I miss the people that started me. That's just the way it is. Anyway, hour number two is still to come. We've got some great, great guests in hour number two. We'll go to the UK and bring in Kenny Rainford. He's a personality, don't know about that. But the guy that started CompuBox, Logan Hobson, will be here. He's from Brooklyn. You're going to have some fun. The bottom line is, I got some great guests. Stay tuned. Hour number two, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide.